Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. We are in a slightly different location now. It sounds a little echoey now that I use my words out loud, but you guys said last one sounded fine. There was a suite we can see right now, but there's a lot of beeping noises and construction stuff happening as they're changing the court, I believe, for Game 2. We are recording this live from Phoenix Suns Arena after a 122-105 Suns win in Game 1 over the Denver Nuggets. I think I said this is the Empire of the Suns podcast already. I don't remember. Kevin, you're shaking your head.
I
wrote three different days of the week in my recap that I had to go through. I was like, okay, it's not Tuesday and it's not Thursday. I had it right with Monday that one time.
What day was the Jimmy Eat World concert? Because it's that day.
Oh, that day ruled.
Actually, it's not that day. It is that day. So no, I don't even know what time it is.
I am Kellen Olsen in this like oddly nice lounge seating that's randomly in a hallway here of the suite floor of Phoenix Suns Arena alongside Kevin Zimmerman. Kevin, your initial thoughts on Game 1?
Did that feel like Game 1 of the Lakers series? It felt like that, but more on steroids to me.
Yeah, I proclaimed on this podcast and wrote in other places that I thought the second half of Game 4 was the first time the Suns really got to play their style of basketball. This felt like it wasn't so much an invitation from the Nuggets, but it was like, okay, if this is what you guys are really about, move the ball, have Jay Crowder and Mikal Bridges take 15-plus threes and just beat us that way. And the Suns were like, okay, that's fine. So the way the Nuggets defend, they are basically going to try and take the ball out of Booker and Paul's hands before they even get inside the three-point line, ideally. Now, sometimes they were getting in there, sometimes they weren't. Book had three of his five turnovers in the game in the first quarter. He had all five in the first half. But we saw him, and you were noting this about midway through the second quarter. It's like, all right, he's starting to make every single read already. It took him a couple of games in the Lakers series? It takes him a half against this defense. And what we just saw was that the Nuggets, who were, I believe, 27th in the league in giving up the amount of corner threes they give up in the regular season, the Suns were the third best team in the league in terms of the amount of corner threes they generate. The Suns were the second best team in the NBA in terms of their efficiency on those corner threes. Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder on their own took 11 of them. They made five. And it was just this sort of battle in the first game where it was like, okay, can you guys beat us as a team? And the Suns like emphatically did.
It was emphatic because you look at Chris Paul's fourth quarter, huge finish by him. Book didn't really get going, but his job's to draw the defense, and that opened everything up. DA obviously had a great game against Jokic, at least matching him. And then Mikal Bridges, like you said, just gets these corner threes, but also what we saw from him was the coaches wanted him to, hey, you miss your first few, take it off the dribble. I think I said to you before the game, the biggest thing for me is just how the Nuggets rotation works with the guards. They have holes when you consider Facundo Campazzo, Austin Rivers, and Michael Porter Jr. as your small forward on the perimeter. They have decisions to make on who you want to put those guys on, because Aaron Gordon's also guarding the shooting guard on the Suns, which is Devin Booker. So what that does is you're going to have to hide someone on Mikal Bridges, and he was killing the shorter guys, taking a few dribbles, hitting a shot. He had five assists too. Or even Michael Porter Jr., who, you know, CP3 and Book would just get like wide-eyed and ISO the heck out of him.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing with Mikal, where if he sees him closing out, he's definitely going to take a few dribbles and try to get blow by him.
Yeah, we entered this series looking at double teams, wondering, okay, are they going to double Book? Are the Suns going to double Jokic? We barely saw that in this game, and it benefited both of those sides. Jokic wasn't hitting the shots he usually does. We'll get to that in a bit. That was no slight at the way DeAndre Ayton played defensively. I thought he was awesome. But to what you're saying, you won't be surprised to hear this, Kevin. I'm very excited to watch this game back because the smart basketball people said that the Suns were specifically targeting Michael Porter Jr., it seemed like. And when you talk about the foundation of a defense, they're not doing a complicated defensive scheme by any means, but what they are trying to do defensively requires everyone to do their job. And when Michael Porter Jr. is just not that great at the job that he has to do in that defense, it crumbles. And from what everyone was saying and what I'm going to watch back, I assume, is Michael Porter Jr. kind of being a step off in some directions. And you saw how Crowder and Bridges, how open they were for some of those looks. Some of those were quick releases, Crowder mainly, but there were a couple too where it's like no matter what they're doing and what they're trying to cancel out, tagging on Ayton, whatever it is, they're not supposed to be that open. And apparently a lot of that went back to Porter, so that's going to be a really interesting game one to game two adjustment. But I guess we should mention it. I don't remember it off the top of my head. I wrote it in my column, but I believe it was a 36-12 run. If you take that 16-0 run in less than 3.5 minutes in the third quarter, combine it with from that point on until Torrey Craig's lob, which was the loudest I've heard this arena ever because I wasn't really here for the Nash years that so much. So that's the loudest I've ever heard this place. 36-12 run in less than 11 minutes. And they just got back to what they want to do, which is run. There was a really cool anecdote from Book where he was having a conversation with DA and he said, there was a possession tonight where he was in a full sprint in transition. He looked to his right, and DeAndre was passing him. He was running as fast as he could, but DeAndre was just getting by him. And DeAndre had a big smile on his face when I told him about that, and he just said, we always talk about that. We always say when the ball is in the air, we grab it, and then we grab it, we are going. That's how they like to play. And to take it back to what I said at the opening, that's kind of what Denver was challenging them, and I think the thing that makes this such a dangerous series for Denver and not something that we talked about a lot or something I wrote about really at all in the preview is that it's all about good defense, a good offense for this team. I've talked about that a ton just because of how much the guys themselves and Monty talk about it. And if Denver can't put together enough offense, I mean, what they wind up with tonight, 105 points, and they were shooting over 50% for most of this game, Kevin.
Yeah.
They got great games out of Campazzo and Gordon. I thought Gordon in those mismatches, he clearly had a mentality where he's like, if I get anyone in the post that's, I mean, like really not Jay Crowder or DeAndre Ayton or Torrey Craig, he's going to back them down under the basket. And he had some impressive looks. Campazzo was everywhere in this game. I thought that he was great. And just offensively, Monte Morris was one of 10. He was their third leading scorer. He averaged over 15 points per game against Portland. But he's just not really a scorer, Kevin. So I just wonder if the Nuggets can put together enough offense, not only to just keep up with the Suns, but keep them from getting better offense. Because once they started missing enough shots and the communication breakdowns weren't happening as much that Monty mentioned with the switching, it was just a tidal wave that hit Denver.
Yeah, I mean, the Suns looked awful in that first half, and you look up and they're down one at halftime.
Defensively, they were real bad.
It was not even close. Monty said it was just they didn't know whether to switch in certain situations. They weren't talking very well. And when you throw in Campazzo kind of playing over his head, Michael Porter Jr.'s first half felt really good from like just watching it, even though it wasn't that many points
And not many like good shots. But I don't think there's obviously a wide open three is good for Michael Porter Jr., but I don't think a good or a bad shot exists for him. There are just shots, Kevin, and he makes a lot of them. He's really good.
Yeah, and the Suns are right there, and then once they just fix the problems, you know, it all was a tidal wave. And I think the big thing that I was surprised with was DA, and I know he's had good games against Jokic, but he got going even though the defense wasn't awful against him. Like, he hits a tough hook. I think he hit him, even took a midi in the first quarter, one of his first shots. But he also is the key in transition, because when you look at what's really going to break the Nuggets is to take their best player out. And Jokic could go for 40 with a good defensive performance from Ayton, I think. But the problem for the Nuggets is, how is he playing defense? Is DA sprinting down the court? And I don't know if your question and what Book said about him running past him was the play where he did the meme. But if you watch that play, like, DA is sprinting along with Book.
That's what gets DA said, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was gets that in play. Front of him, and that's kind of what freed up Book to at the least take the play. Shot. Yeah. So that stuff is, again, the stuff that I'm looking for. It's not that he had 20 points, but that's a great sign that there's carryover and his confidence is still there from the Lakers series.
It's crazy in the first half, too. I saw a lot of people in terms of, again, rewatching the game. It sounded like he was actually getting beat down the court more often than not in the first half. I wasn't seeing that part of the game, really. It's one of those things where you watch a game for the first time live, not on TV. You miss a couple of things. I wasn't catching who he was beating down the court, who he wasn't, that kind of thing. I'll be curious to watch it back. But I think that he just has such a good feel for post-defense. We saw that at U of A whenever, like, I don't know why you would ever run a post-up on DeAndre Ayton, but for like the five times we saw it in college, he just swallowed dudes up and just has such a good instinct for what guys are going to do, where his feet can go, which is crazy because when you watch him hesitate sometimes in off-ball scenarios early on in his career, we would watch him at U of A, Kevin, and just be like, it actually feels like he has awesome defensive instincts when you watch him on the ball specifically. I know they're two different parts, but still, it really popped in this game. There was even that Jokic had a pump fake, and I can't remember if it was Crowder or Paul at the top of the key who closed out him. He dribbled in and tried like a floater, and it was one of those things where you're like, don't foul DA, don't foul DA. Yeah. And DeAndre didn't foul, and he had a really good contest on it. And I just think whatever it is with playing against like AD, Embiid, less so Embiid, more so guys like Gobert and Davis especially, he just seems to have a really good feel for defending these high-level scores. I don't know what it is, what it brings the best out of him. Chris Paul said that's the thing that not a lot of people understand about DA, is that he's just a high-level competitor. And maybe that's it. It just brings the best out of him, and it's that simple. But this was a strange game, Kevin, for me from that standpoint, because I mentioned Campazzo and Gordon were excellent, and that to me made it feel like a game the Nuggets had to win. But I don't know, if you're looking at it from a Suns perspective, this has got to be Jokic's worst game of the series. Now I know he played relatively well still, but he's the MVP. I expect him to average 30 in this series. DeAndre did well on him, could wear him down, but I do not expect him to play worse than he did tonight. So I think the Suns had to win. But then again, from a Nuggets perspective, Chris Paul and Devin Booker at one point in the third quarter only had 8 combined field goals. They finished with 16, so they got going in the second half and found their spots once the game really blew up, and that's what Book mentioned. He said, once we got on that run, that's where we started to see some open shots develop, and those two were able to get themselves going. But I don't know. I'll ask you, because I still don't know. Do you think this was a game that the Suns had to win more or the Nuggets had to win more just based on how everything played out?
I think the Nuggets had to win it more just because I think I had questions about their depth. And look, Monte Morris could go for a big game still. I'm not going to put that out of there. But Campazzo looked really good.
God, he was great.
I guess Austin Rivers could play a lot better. Did he have 2 points or something? But to me, when you have Book and Chris Paul not on point, like I tweeted something like, I think they just realized that Campazzo has 8 points and they have a combined 8 points.
Right.
And they're like, crap.
Yeah. Book really went at Rivers for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, and Paul went at 2 shots. That might have been the second quarter. But when you look at that stuff and how bad, again, the Suns played defense, I think that's a game Denver has to have. And the scary part is when you look back at their Portland series, their defense wasn't good there either. Yeah. I don't know. It's also the first half, the Suns' offense looked dysfunctional because Aaron Gordon was flying around. Their length is problematic. But again, when you're sending that many blitzes, look, the Suns figured out the Lakers, and that team, as terrible and bad as they're very generally good role players played, like, that's a good team when they're scrambling, right? Like, that's why they had a number one defense. But the Suns are forcing teams to scramble, and they're figuring out how to find open shots. And when Mikal Bridges is starting to take stuff off the dribble and make easy plays, that's trouble for you.
there are three thoughts that I have, and I'm going to try to remember all three of them, and I'm certainly going to forget at least one, probably two, as I keep talking, as they trail out of my brain that is all out of information to hold. Inspired from what you said, Kevin, the first one is that if this makes sense, the Nuggets will not lose a game, and they will control a game if you're not playing to your best, like the Suns were in the first half. The problem is they do not have the firepower, unless they are hitting threes, to like be up 15, 18, 20, unless Jokic is amazing. That's really the only thing that can happen. Jokic is just really, really great, and he wasn't tonight. The second one is the third one, because I forgot the second one. See, I call it. I saw Matt Moore, who we both love, Hardwood, Bruxism, and we all grew up reading that. I saw him say, like, well, Denver, like, if Mikal Bridges averages 25 a game, they're not going to, like, it's an easy series, sure. Well, it's like, if you're allowing Mikal Bridges to, like, get that comfortable, which is what this was, he made one semi-difficult mid-range shot, but Kevin, he shot 50% from the mid-range this year. He's perfectly comfortable taking those shots, and if you're allowing him to play that comfortable and get that cozy, you're okay. And the second point that I got to, I remembered it.
Oh, here we go.
Was that there are too many moments in this series where it's a bad sign for the Nuggets, and there's a really great thing that I think is mostly a football thing. I'd be interested to see what people think about this, where you watch a team play for the first time or you watch a matchup for the first time, and there's something that immediately stands out that wasn't really possible until you saw them play. And for me, every time Campazzo, Morris, Rivers, Millsap, Green, so I just named five guys already, anytime they shot the ball, I was like, Suns are good. When Rivers started dribbling inside, I was like, that's great. That's
Austin
terrific
Rivers
news.
Dribbling, yeah.
That's terrific news for the Suns. Now, when Campazzo was in pick and roll, you're worrying there, but I'm saying, like, if Campazzo's taking an open three, whatever, live with it. Same kind of thing with Monte Morris taking an off-the-dribble 18-footer. Terrific. Have a go, my son. Now, Aaron Gordon backing guys down, getting them out of the basket, that can cause problems. But, like, Gordon taking a two-dribble pull-up, which we didn't really see in this game, and part of why he was so excellent. Again, that's another guy where you're like, okay, you can have that shot. That is okay with me. Michael Porter Jr., that just doesn't exist because any shot can go in. But, yeah, man, those are, like, the three parts where all of those I worry for the Nuggets in this series. Something I mentioned on Burns and Gambo is that a really good indicator of how this series could swing is how close the Michael Porter Jr. and Mikal Bridges matchup is, because to simplify the discussion of these two teams with the Jamal Murray injury and Will Barton and PJ Dozier being out, Nikola Jokic is the best player in the series by a pretty decent margin. The difference between Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton compared to whoever you want to put fifth in this series, whether it's Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, Mikal Bridges, Jay Crowder, or whoever, is humongous. Now, Michael Porter Jr., has a huge series, he's the fifth best player, or maybe he jumps up a bit. We're really talking about a different series here. But if there's not much of a gap between Michael Porter Jr. and whoever that is, Jay Crowder, Mikal Bridges, or Mikal Bridges plays better than Michael Porter Jr. in the series, it's over. Yeah. The Nuggets cannot win this series. So, to that point, DeAndre Ayton outplayed Nikola Jokic in this game, and Mikal Bridges outplayed Michael Porter Jr., the two best players for the Nuggets. So, I think that that's just a disaster for Denver.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the... I might be repeating myself, but it goes back to just the limitations in that backcourt. And we did see, I'll just say this, we did see Will Barton and PJ Dozier working out before the game. Jamal Murray was also out there, but he's not going to play this series.
Nope.
So, I mean, those two guys, neither of them is going to add a ton of offensive punch. Will Barton, they would really like to have him, I think.
He can do dribble stuff. He's not on my list of, like, oh, no, guys when he's dribbling.
Right, yeah. And so the dribble stuff is what they're lacking right now, because Campazzo is like an average at best three-point shooter, but he's like sub 40% as a scorer inside the arc, I believe, because he's just
small.
He had a tight pass to Jokic for a three or whatever.
Doesn't have the touch of TJ McConnell in the mid-range. Just lacks it.
Low-key better athlete TJ McConnell is than Facundo. But, like, he has that. We joked about Austin Rivers, who sometimes will try to put on dribbling exhibitions.
And he'll be better in this series. I thought that he did not play well tonight, and he's been better.
Worse, really. He just got prayed. Dude, did you see the clip of him, like, doing the Andre Drummond thing with, like, doing...
But in the opposite way.
Yeah, it was the opposite. He was mirroring what Chris Paul was doing.
He was doing it like he was a member of the Suns bench, where he was, like, cross, pull, and it's like, Austin...
Austin, I'm glad you know.
Tell him. Who was guarding him? Facundo?
I think so.
It's like, Facundo, he's going to pull up once he goes to his right hand.
Facundo can't do anything about it,
though. If you haven't seen that video, I think Mike Vigil tweeted it. I think you
retweeted,
did. You did, too. It's amazing. Kevin, I do not want to end this podcast without, and I almost, I did, kiddos, if you're writing a recap and you're trying to get to a lot of stuff like this fella, or even less, which is what normal people do, Kevin, but I write many words. Scan the box score real quick and just see if anything else stands out, because my goodness, Torrey Craig had 9 points, 8 rebounds, and 2 blocks in 17 minutes, and he was way better than that box score indicates. There were a couple possessions where he was just grabbing Jermichael Green and was like, you are not getting an offensive rebound when I'm on the court. It's not happening. And you want to talk about a guy who embodies the way the Nuggets play on the other side of the court. It was just so great to see that type of player in this game. And then Chris Paul with a not so subtle, but like, he didn't mean to say it in a cute way, but he just ended his answer on Torrey saying, like, it's really valuable to have a guy who was just on that team telling this stuff. And it clearly paid off. Now, Kevin, we are having this podcast dangerously veer, and at least with what I've been saying, in the way of making this sound like Suns in 5, 4, 6, whatever, like it's going to be pretty easy. The Nuggets all year have been a great team at adjustments, and Michael Malone is one of the best in the league at doing so. They're going to change some things in Game 2 and Game 3 that are going to help them out a lot. One of them is going to be Nikola Jokic being better and certain players being better, but they're going to change some things schematically for sure. I just worry for their sake how much they're going to need to change, because they cannot have anything similar to what they were running in defensively in this game, because Book will just tear it to shreds because he figured it out. You need to go back to the drawing board because he figured it out. And gee whiz, Kevin, that's a high-level offensive player when he can diagnose your scheme in a half and then just be like, oh, okay, I'm just going to make the right pass every single time now.
You know what we haven't mentioned either?
JaVale McGee.
Oh, no. We didn't mention him.
Okay.
He was fun, though.
That was my guess.
I was going to say Chris Paul's injury.
Good point.
Like, literally, like, a minute into the game, he, like, kind of heard it looked like, because he's throwing a red pass or making a catch over his head, and someone grabbed the ball or something. Grabbed at his shoulder, and it's like, uh-oh, here we go again. And then didn't really shoot. Hit a three, I believe, in the first half that was really, really, really wide open. And it's like, oh, okay. Didn't shoot in the third, really. And then he just, like, got really better and was just like, ha-ha. I, like, asked Dave Burns, was sitting beside me. I was like, was he just waiting until the fourth to be like, oh, I'm fine, it's fine. Like, I could totally see him doing that.
Can I be mildly perturbed?
Sure.
He's not fine.
I don't think he's fine, but...
It
was the crowd's juice that just made his shoulder alley better.
It is not to what you are saying. It is what I see on the timeline. I think someone even asked a question of saying, like, Chris is clearly 100% now. And it's like,
no.
He is closer to 60 than 100. Now, what he can do is he can still do the Chris Paul thing for 2 to 3 minutes. And he, to your point, picked the perfect time in the game where it was like, oh, we're on a run and we can end this thing right now. Okay, I'll do 10 points and an assist in 3 minutes. Thank you very much. The game is over now. Yeah. I am Chris Paul and that is what I do. But the shooting was a deal. He was 2 of 9. He was short on the jumper. Short on the jumper was what we saw initially, from what I remember, when the shoulder was bothering him. Most of those mid-range jumpers were short. The three that he hit, boy, did he take a while to think about it.
Yeah.
He's closer to 60 than 100, or even 50 than 100. That's how I would phrase it.
But the important part is he can dribble, and his passing seems at least, like, functional, where, like, his arm literally didn't work before, and now he's able to dribble, and that's taking... Like, he's like Rondo right now. It's like, I'm not going to shoot like old Rondo, but I can still... do whatever I want with the ball, pretty much.
That functionality is about closer to 100 than 50, but there was one outlet pass where he was on the right side of the court on, like, the left wing, if this makes sense, in the backcourt, and he was throwing it to Booker, who was at half court on the left sideline, basically. Like, basically a cross-court pass. Like, they're on opposite sides of the court. It did not get picked. Devin had to stop moving and reach down here to grab it. And that was one of those where I was like, it's still the thing where it must hurt like a mother effer every time he throws those passes. Yeah. And the ones where you imagine like the shot put motion where you have to like push back your right shoulder and then push it forward. I'm miming this to Kevin right now because this is an audio format. Now we're both doing shot put forms to pictures of people like Steve Nash holding his MVP trophy. Look at you, Steve. Look at what they've done without you, bud. They're just moving on to bigger and better things. They never needed you. The guy who's going to probably win an NBA championship this year, Steve Nash.
Woo-wee, that was a game.
Yeah, I got here at 4:30 and was like, awesome, I'm just going to watch this Brooklyn Bucks game. It's going to take me right to 7. And then at 6 o'clock, I was like, or even at 5:15, I was like, all right, let's go talk to friends in the press box for an hour because that game's over.
Did Blake Griffin get microplatelet, whatever, knees, whatever, because he was dunking?
Kevin, you're going to be shocked to hear this. He was kind of dogging it on the terrible Detroit Pistons. He was not giving it his all on the Detroit Pistons. Isn't that crazy?
On the Detroit Pistons.
Can you imagine someone doing that?
I would work so hard for the Detroit Pistons.
He wasn't dunking, Kevin. He can't dunk anymore. Because he was trying his best on the Detroit Pistons, of course. Who wouldn't? On a team going nowhere. A franchise in ruin.
Josh Jackson really brings that out in his teammates.
As you can tell, this really bothered me at the time. When he was getting signed and when we talked about it, him going to the Suns, I was like, he's not what he looks like. Now, he's been awesome in those two games. Like, he's been like the third best player in the series, maybe.
That's not good.
Maybe even second. Not good for the Bucks.
My goodness. That's...
Chris Middleton, underrated, not looking. That crowd is going to have to hold off on saying he's underrated
because it's been a rough start to him. My DA guarding Giannis as a rookie pretty well take on the Bucks can't ever win like this has paid dividends.
All right, so for closing thoughts, I want you to give me one player on either side you're looking at in game two. Doesn't have to be someone under the radar. It can be the obvious choices. I'm not going to restrict you.
Ooh. I'm going to do Monte Morris because, like, they need a dude who can be number three. I'm assuming Michael Porter will have decent games.
Yeah.
Mikal got switched off of him a lot, which is the problem in that first half, but they figured that out. It seemed Jokic is going to get his, obviously. Yeah. I think they need a third dude just to show up.
I think to my fourth thing that I thought of that's trouble for the Nuggets, we just figured it out. You know? Like, that was the thing. The gap in the teams, it's like, the Suns just figured it out. Devin Booker just figured out their defense. They figured out the switching. It was fine. The Nuggets executed really well at the start of the game, by the way, offensively.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, like they're here for this game, as we expect it to be. Jokic is mine. I think we both go towards Nuggets players just because we're expecting a bounce back from them. I think he's going to have at least 35 in game two, probably 40. He's an MVP, Kevin, and that's what MVPs do. And he has always been the thing I wrote about with him that I don't know if enough people realize is that he plays his best basketball in the postseason. He's a really, really, really good player, one of the 5'10 best in the league. And he plays his best ball in this time of year, and you're not going to get two duds in him from him in a row, which a dud was still like 22 or 23. Whatever.
I mean, they showed stuff to free him up with Ayton off. It's not an Ayton thing. It's just this is a tough basketball play to defend if you execute it against that human who's large and awkward.
Yeah. He had like 5-6 decent looks that weren't just Ayton getting contests, and he missed all of them. And if he would have made just 2 or 3 of them, now we're talking about 30 points in a better night.
I will say to our earlier convo about Ayton, like, I think what you don't see as a fan or reporter people like we are is I think when Jokic is used to shouldering into people or taking contact – taking contact against DA is very different. I think people, like, you don't see him, like, if he's standing there not moving, you don't realize how hard it probably hurts to run into that man not moving.
Yeah.
And I think that's why having a big is so important, like him, just because those things don't pop. But maybe Jokic isn't going to average 36 points a game in this series because of that. It accounts for a couple missed shots more than his usual self.
Last question. Yeah. Do you expect them, their tweak defensively, to be less tagging on Ayton and they kind of ease up on their... Basically, it's like the basketball terminology is meeting them at the screen or beyond. Like, blitzes is like you're going beyond the level of the screen. You're just like, la, 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 pass the ball. The
like run and Halloween,
the,
like...
Yeah, the run and jump, as Devin calls it. Do you expect them to kind of free up Ayton more? And I ask you that because that's what the Lakers did. The Lakers were like, we'll tag him for like a half second, but we're getting to the shooters. Go ahead, dude.
Yeah.
Do you expect the Nuggets to embrace a little bit more of that now, or do you think they're still going to... kind of stick to what they, that would be a drastic shift from the way they played defense, because what we saw tonight is how they defended in the Portland series as well.
They should try. I don't know what they can do because
me neither.
They just have bad matchups. You can hope that the Suns miss, and I think that's why the Mikal thing that I was trying to work on today was interesting, because even if they're not hitting threes, I think the Suns coaching staff is like, that's fine. You don't need to take the threes. Take two dribbles, and they're screwed because Michael Porter Jr. is going to have to make third, fourth decisions as a defender.
Yeah.
And you're never going to find an answer that
way. He struggles with one and two, so asking him to do three and four is tough.
So if you want to sit on shooters more, I think that would be a good move by them, yes.
Yeah, you never want to overreact too much to game one, and that's not what we're doing. We're just saying...
Well, I feel better about being like, Mike Malone will have something than Frank Vogel.
You immediately, omitted after game one, like, is Vogel all right? Energy? And you turned out to be super right about that. By the way, not a big take that I was seeing anywhere else, but, like, I'm with you. Like, that was a strange series from him.
Hey, real quick.
Yep.
Jason Kidd turning down the Portland Trailblazers job definitely is a, I'm just going to wait this one out, right?
I wonder why he did that, Kevin. Interesting choice by him. He might have a feeling something's on the horizon.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. I do not want to overreact to game one, like I said, but for me at least, the stylistic things that we saw in this game, the personnel-based things that we saw in this game, just the schematic things that we saw in this game, all of them favored the Suns in a way where I'm curious to see watching the game back tomorrow if that remains the case. I think that it will, maybe even more. But I want to emphasize this against the Suns fans. Malone and the Nuggets as a team are not only great at adjusting, but executing those adjustments, because as we saw with very bad Suns teams, you can have game plans, but you got to have the players to execute them, and they're really great. I think, like, I brought up Gordon posting up. That was one thing where I was clear, like, Aaron, you got to just put him under the basket. And Aaron was like, sir, yes, sir.
Yeah.
We'll get it done. Campazzo and Gordon, it was like, get your hands on everything. Have those hands up, sir, yes, sir. they were great. And they're a really great team. And I just don't want this podcast to give off the energy like we think this is going to be a blowout, because it wasn't, but it was just in terms of the – I'm struggling to think of a more encouraging game one for the Suns than this one.
Yeah, I think just when you get everyone going, and that's why I said on steroids compared to the Lakers series, when you get everyone going, it's a good omen for, you know, when things go tougher in the next few games. Who steps up? Who's feeling good? Lots of guys on the Suns are feeling good right now.
Should we go home now? It's midnight.
Yeah.
It's tomorrow.
It's Tuesday.
Hope you guys have a good one. We'll be back for game two on Wednesday night or Thursday. We'll see how we're feeling. We had the energy for this one, or at least we mustered up enough fake energy that we had not left. Whatever way, we'll bring that energy. I'm going to end the podcast now so we can drive home and sleep. Bye, everyone.